Thank you, Dr. Clark. We're going to talk about pregnancy loss issues as relate to the Virginia perspective, kind of what producers deal with here in the state, what we get involved with extension and all that sort of thing. People like to talk about a dirty fingernail veterinarian, right? You know, my wife's biggest fear was that when we went to the wedding, my fingernails were going to be dirty. I mean, that's one thing she wanted to make sure they were clean when I came to the wedding. So, I won't tell you who that is because we want to protect the guilty, but, oh, oops. I don't know how that happened. I was supposed to be keep covered there. Part of the way I think Dr. Whittier keeps it cheap for his clientele on the rectal palpation is that he doesn't wear an OB sleeve. Now, plastic might have been fairly expensive when he graduated from veterinary school, but it's come down quite a bit in price these days. So you can use those nowadays. Don't have to bare arm them, but anyway. The other thing you might note there is he's wearing insulated coveralls and an extra deal. I think it's October when that picture was made. So anyway. All right. We talk about pregnancy loss. It encompasses a lot of different problems. Okay, we've got lots of things that we term under this one big deal. And it's important that we think about these different aspects because as we look to try to figure out what the problem might be, what the solutions are, we need to define what the problem is on your own farm. Whether it's apparent abortions, those cows you actually see the calf come out of, you see placenta hanging out of her, you know, when she's 5 months pregnant, whatever, so that we know that that cow was pregnant that she aborted. The inapparent abortion. You know, whether that be the cow that was preg-checked pregnant and now doesn't calve, whether that be a cow you didn't see cycle for, you know, several times and all of a sudden now here it is a month before calving season, you see some cows starting to cycle. The inapparent abortions that we don't know exactly what might be going on there. Stillborns or DOAs, you know, while maybe not technically pregnancy loss, the result's still the same. We still wind up with no calf for that cow to raise. And then the weak-born calf. And I divide that into two different categories. If we take the weak-born calf, if it dies in the first 24 hours, I'm more likely to consider and think about things that cause these other things, whether that be dystocias or other problems that result in those calves being very weak when they're born. When they're over 24 hours of age, I tend to put that more towards neonatal death loss. Now, that's not a perfect split, but kind of to try to... So we're all on the same page and trying to get these things recorded properly. That's kind of where I draw the lines. It is a big expense for beef producers, right? If we have these pregnancy losses. You got the cost of feeding the open cow, and Terry Slusher talked about that. And some other speakers have touched on how much that cost. The opportunity cost of the lost profit of the calf. We've got that expense as well. You know, here we had this resource, this grass resource on the farm, and whatever the net profit would have been on that calf, that we don't get that either. We got the owner unhappiness. Nobody's happy when we think we're going to have 135 cows calve, and then we wind up with a couple that don't calve. Here's my attempt at kind of a barnyard economist look at what those costs are, a sensitivity analysis that you can apply to your operation to look at that. You know, in the red, we've got the cost of keeping that cow. Now, we only apply the cost of keeping that cow from weaning until when you sell her. And so we'll make the worst case example and say you don't know it till the end of the calving season that she's not going to calve. Not that you saw her abort and sold her earlier or whatever, but you can put in the, you know, whatever that cost is going to be for your deal, and then whatever the net profit is for your calf crop down through there that she would have raised, and those two together would make up your total loss associated with that. There are some factors about when you sell the cow relative to when you would have otherwise, and if you really wanted to be an economist, but that'll get you pretty dang close. And depending on how bad the problem is on your operation, how many cows you have doing this, would give you an idea of how much we might want to invest in trying to determine what the problem is and deal and solutions that may help reduce the problem, what to spend on those. Causes of pregnancy loss, that's a pair of Siamese twin calves that I got presented to me. The owner went in them to try to deliver those calves and said, I don't know what's going on. I could tell you I went in there because y'all weren't there. I could tell you I went in there and said, oh yeah, those are two twin calves. They're conjoined at the hips and we're going to have to do a C-section. Actually, I went in there and said, there's something really funny going on in here and we're going to have to do a C-section. So I did know that at least. The whole cow wasn't in two parts to get that mess out, but the uterus might have actually been it. I might have actually had the uterus completely split apart and had to sew the whole thing back together. It takes a big hole in the cow and a big hole in the uterus to get that mess out. So we have genetic defects that occur. Certainly some of those are getting a lot of play right now. Environmental stresses, nutritional things. This question about whether palpation might potentially cause pregnancy loss and that sort of thing, certainly that topic's already been covered to a great extent today. Now, what are the things that in the recent past and as we move forward are we dealing with in Virginia, and what have you guys seen out there that we get called in on from an extension and a veterinary standpoint? And there are several of those. Producers being bothered by the fact of these cows that turn up and don't calve, you know, these pregnancy losses and the issues associated with them. Centered in a couple of spots in the state, but spread over a pretty large area of the state in the fall of 2012. Calving season, we had issues. 2013, calving issues as well. And then as we look forward, we'll cover this looking forward to this breeding season of 2013 and spring of 2014. Records. Boy, it's difficult to find good data, folks. It's really hard, particularly when we look at this particular aspect. What happens? Cow 59 is in heat, and you're like, oh, she's not going to calve. Oh, we're going to the market anyway. We load her up, and we take her to the market, and everybody forgets about her. They forget that that's a cow that didn't calve, that wasn't, and she doesn't wind up in our records and data sets very well. Certainly not true for everybody, but boy, it's easy to let cows slip through the cracks and easy not to get real good data. Thanks to our partnership with the Virginia Department of Corrections and their allowance for us to use their data and their records and their cows, we have a really good data set that is made up of 12 herds across the state of Virginia, roughly 2,500 cows and heifers calving, split relatively even between spring and fall. And so kind of the opposite of what Dr. Whittier told you about with some of this, a lot of the information I'm going to do you is data collection. It is not refereed research. It's not looked at that. But we wanted to look and see in these typical herds that are spread all across the state, what might be normal? And so that's what we're asking ourselves. What is normal pregnancy loss? What would you like it to be? Zero. Is that a reasonable goal?
No.
No, that's exactly right. It's not a reasonable goal. Everybody would like for it to be zero. Every species has pregnancy loss. I don't care what species we're talking about. Every species is always going to have pregnancy loss, and we're never going to get that to zero. What might be normal? And it's very important to define normal, because if we don't have normal defined, then we can't know when we've deviated from normal and when we have a problem that needs to be addressed. You know, so here's three herds with some good data on pregnancy loss. You know, and you can see their numbers run about 2.5 to 4%. They fluctuate year to year quite a bit there as to what those pregnancy losses are, but they fluctuate. Here's a herd that has both spring and fall calving cows, and you can see it's from a low of 2% in spring of 2012. Spring of 2013 was 1.3 up to 4.5. So quite a bit of fluctuation there, but somewhere in the 2 to 4% range for those herds. So that's what they looked at and found there after those cows had been pregnancy diagnosed and those cows showed up open. Well, what's changed? Okay, there's one big thing that's changed with the advent of AI. It's wanting to know whether those cows are AI'd or not and more accurate staging of how pregnant those cows are when they're pregnancy checked. And so what we've done is we've moved pregnancy check much earlier into the equation. So now we're oftentimes going in as soon as we can after the bull goes out, 30 to 40 days. So the farthest along those cows are might be 100, 110, 120 days along. And we're doing that so that we can get a more accurate staging of when they are. That allows us to be more accurate. Dr. Whittier showed you the data. Then he threw me under the bus and said he was didn't want to embarrass me. One percentage point, and that's all I hear about, folks. One percentage point. You know, but it was he did win, you know. I mean, that's all right. So, anyway. Well, you know, disadvantages, the earlier we check them, the longer she's got to go before we know it. So if we've traditionally done weaning time checks, then we've got that extra 2 or 3 months that they had a chance to lose a calf relative to when we check them earlier. So if you make that decision, and that's an informed decision you need to make, then you need to realize that the cost of that is going to be more pregnancy loss. Now, in the dairy cow, very well worked out. Very well worked out. It's easy to do, right? You take a few thousand cow dairies, you take headlocks, you go palpate them all the time, and we've really figured out kind of what this curve of pregnancy loss is in the dairy cow. As far as I can tell, it's not been well done in the beef cow, so we're trying to get that accomplished, at least to a reasonable level. And so what we did this year is we went in the fall calving herds in the beef, in the Virginia Department of Corrections deal, and most of those cows got palpated 3 times, and some got palpated twice. And then students behind us on those that were being checked for their accuracy and graded on their accuracy, because these were all done during food animal times we had food animal students. So for the 3 times cows in the fall, those cows were checked between about 45 and 75 days of pregnancy. A little bit of variation there depending on when we went to the farm. There were 353 pregnancies that pregnant to AI that were checked in. We start with 100% there. We go to 98.5% at 100 days, so we lost 1.5%. At 180 days, or roughly 6 months, we lost about another 0.5%. So in fairly well-managed herds of cows that have a good herd health vaccination program, I think that's pretty typical. Now, we don't have the 6 month. This is this fall's calving crop. We don't have the 6 month until calving yet. And there have been some losses. We know there have been some losses. There have been some people that have lost some calves that were past that 6 month time, but prior to that had dead calves. And so we'll have a few more losses to add in there. So that's not the end of the story quite yet. But I didn't feel comfortable giving that data to you because in case we missed one and missed time to when she was going to calve and stuff versus being open, I didn't feel comfortable doing that just yet. These are all the cows, including those cows that I just showed you and the cows that only got checked twice, and the numbers were exactly the same. Between 45 and 75 days and 100 days, we lost about 1.5% of the pregnancies that we diagnosed. Now, this includes cows that didn't get checked a third time. We're doing the exact same thing with the spring cows. And so those cows got checked just a little bit earlier, few reasons for that, and a little bit later, a little bit wider interval between the two. We still got one pregnancy diagnosis to go on them, and then they're calving out. But between 45 and 60 days and about 120 days, you can see that we had about 1.1% death loss, basically 1% pregnancy wastage in those fetuses. So that just to give you some idea of what we're looking at and what we're dealing with in what we think are fairly typical normal herds. And there's one of our students. That boy's about 6'4". You can see he's trying really hard to palpate there and everything and that sort of thing. And so all those cows were palpated by both the veterinarian and by veterinary students as well. All right. So fall 2012 calving season issues. This was brought to our attention by Steve Hopkins and a veterinarian. Short gestational length, abortion, stillbirths, weak small calves. And it seemed to be spread across a wide part of the state last fall. that we were having issues with. So therefore, we sent a survey out to try to investigate this problem. We had a couple meetings. We came up with a survey to try to figure out what might be going on. We looked at a number of different things when we put onto that survey. You know how many surveys we got back that were usable? Eight. You know, we got more surveys than that back, but when we went to the data we needed to try to do to fill out the problem, we didn't have complete, we only got complete data from eight herds. That makes it a little hard to do much interpretation of that, but we have this problem to deal with. What we wound up with, is we split it on 94% and above being okay, and below 94% being those cows with problems. It got us four herds in each group. You could argue on that. Overall, between those, it was about 1,200 calf preg, where we could get cow pregnancy check data and calf data on that. They had about 8% death loss. That's plenty. Relative small sample size, and certainly, as far as we can tell, every herd that returned this survey, whether their numbers were good or bad, it believed they had a problem. I think we didn't get anybody's participation did. Now, one of those herds, I think, only had a 2.5% loss, but they still perceived that they were not happy with that loss. And so that certainly skews that data and doesn't make that a normal data set, but it did. So what we did was we said, well, let's see if there was any differences. Let's take the fall of 2011 data from the Department of Corrections and take the fall of 2012 and see if we can figure out any differences there. This is the calving distribution. I know you can't read it in the back, but we started at 266 days when our first calf was born, out to 295 days for our last calf. That was born there, and you can see the distribution, quite a large distribution for 2011, centered exactly on 281 days. So that was the average there. Fall of 2012 really looks very similar. You could maybe try to make an argument that there's a few cows. We actually have one live calf that was born at 250 days of gestation that was alive. Now, it was a little bitty thing, and I have a feeling we didn't get very much for it when we sold it. I didn't follow to see if it lived the weaning. It lived past 21 days, but I didn't follow to see what that calf did out there. And so maybe we had a couple more calves born out there, but the distribution was relatively the same, but skewed just a fuzz. Gestational length, it was 4 days shorter. This is only the AI'd animals. And so the ones that we felt very comfortable with what their breeding dates were, and that same for that previous data. We make judgments even if they've been called a pregnant AI. We make judgments. We do not DNA test, but we look at the calf birth weight, when she calved, and relative to when she was bred, and decide whether we believe it or not. And there were 4 days shorter on average. Spring of 2011, 2012, I know some of y'all are spring calvers, threw that in there. It was exactly the same. It was 281 days. I did this because one of the things that I was hearing when we were doing this deal is fall cows have shorter gestations than spring cows. That's what I kept hearing producers telling me. Our data sure doesn't support that. If you look, we have a couple of large herds that are in the mountains in the Virginia Department of Corrections. We also have a number of herds that are in the heat and the hot part, and they're pretty well distributed around the state. But our data says that the gestational length between spring and fall was exactly the same for all these herds in Virginia, which is not what I hear from producers. Birth weight was a pound heavier. That's probably not within the difference that our accuracy of measuring birth weights are. We only had a pound difference in birth weight, so birth weights were remarkably the same within those deals. Spring, they were identical between 2011 and 2012, and they were the same as the other calves. What do we get out of this? Okay. The surveys returned, we couldn't come up with a clear pattern as to what the problem was. Probably the biggest thing we got out of this was almost every one of these problem herds had a different problem. Okay? Some had abortions. Some had stillbirths. Some had small, weak calves. And that's back to my original thing that we started with. We have got to be able to define the problem so that we can look at some of the things that Dr. Holler is going to talk about and try to figure out how to go about solving this problem and coming up with a solution. Because even though it was all being lumped together, they were geographically in similar locations, we were all looking at the same thing. Actually, when we got into the data, the problems were subtly but importantly different. It's obvious that it's a problem for producers. You got to address it on a farm-to-farm basis because of what I just talked about. And when those calves are being lost, those pregnancies are being lost, should be the starting point to help you narrow down, work with your veterinarian, work with the veterinarians, work with producers to see what it is, which starts with having good records. It all starts and ends with having good records. All right. We have a test here for your observational skills. What do you see? All right, I'll make it a little closer.
Cows in the shade.
Cows in the shade. Thank you very much, man. The vet students were starting to sweat over there. They knew I could wait a long time before we get an answer or not, but yeah. And it's best to answer my first question because they get harder after this. That's cows in the shade. Cows are in the shade. That's a wonderful deal. I had to stop when I was driving along the road to take that picture. Anybody want to guess when that picture was made? What time of year? What?
Spring.
Grass is nice, pretty and green and growing, right? What time of day? 9 a.m. on May 27th. 9 a.m. on May 27th. What do we perceive as the heat issues associated with cattle in the mountains of Southwest Virginia in May at 9 o'clock in the morning on May 27th? We don't perceive any. Do the cows perceive some? Yeah. I mean, they are perfectly lined up with those shade trees. Used to be a common sight, right? Better not be anymore. We better be careful about that, hadn't we? Used to be a common sight. Now, unfortunately, I had to get a picture of some soccer calves being strip grazed. But fenced, having water fenced out and that sort of thing, I didn't have a good picture of that. But we fenced out all these waterways and everything. What else did we fence out, Terry? Yeah. We accidentally fenced out most of the shade and some of the water heat abatement that we had going on with these cows. To me, that is a big part of the potential issue here and something we need to think about. Now, what's changed in recent years when we look at this problem and potential deal here? Fall calving, we've moved it earlier and earlier. And there are three reasons that I think that is, plus another one that I forgot to put up there. The one I forgot to put in there is that when you're breeding these cows, you're more likely to have stockpiled fescue and have them on a better plane of nutrition. And I left that one out, so I apologize for that. But that's certainly an issue as to why you want to, if they calve earlier, we breed them earlier. So now we breed them in part of November and December instead of December and January or January and February. And so we have better nutrition while they're getting bred. If you're marketing at a fixed endpoint, you'll have older and bigger calves. If you retain ownership, you'll potentially hit the marketplace when those animals finish at a better location, a better time period than if they're born later. And one that I didn't appreciate, but was explained to me, and I think is a very legitimate point with many of our Virginia producers, many of which have other jobs and that sort of thing, is that you got more daylight when you're calving. I mean, I fully appreciate that. You know, you come home from your job, and it's hard to check cows when it's dark and that sort of thing. And so that's one I hadn't thought of, but was pointed out to me as to why that's good for people. We got more producers fencing out water sources, losing shade that we talked about, and then we got weather that we always change it and can't do anything about, but is always different from time to time. So the best theory, and we got lots of people involved in this potential issue, but the best theory we can come up with is it's a multiplex problem. Now, that's a big fancy word, David. You know what that means? means I couldn't find any smoking gun. You know, and if we just solved the problem, I wouldn't have said we got lots of other people involved. I said, I solved the problem and came up with the solution of what it was, you know. Aha. Uh-huh. You know, but I do believe that some combination of these factors presented itself in 2012 that most likely, this is the scenario that most likely results in what we saw with producers. The heat, and that's everything from the weather to the things I talked about with the fencing and cows' lack of shade and that sort of thing. Potentially interactions with fescue. We have not talked about fescue as regards to lake problems, but I am not prepared not to. I still believe it could be playing an issue. Not in and of by itself, but it could play a role, I believe. Got no scientific proof, just my best guess that it could play a role in this whole multiplex of issues there. We got some immune system, potential immune system issues, whether that be micro-mineral issues or whether that be some more stuff with fescue and that sort of thing. And potentially allowing opportunistic bacteria to cross the placenta and cause calf loss or by more direct means. And Dr. Holler is going to just talk about some of those issues and how that relates to things here later on. But this is the best theory we can put forth as to why it is. What does that mean? It means it probably won't be a problem every year.